This podcast is brought to you by Monetary Gold. Listeners who open a qualified account will receive up to $5,000 in free gold or silver. To learn more, go to monetarygold.com/grace. That's monetarygold.com/grace.
The numbers are in. Listeners are voting often and early for Grace Curley, just like they did for her adopted grandfather. From year one to number one.
Make it so, number one.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald, the Spectator, and the Daily Mail.
You got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice, Grace Curley.
Now, live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, the millennial with the mic, the Grace Curley Show.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. There are so many issues to cover today, including Hurricane Ian, including Joe Biden's latest stumbles at his press conference, and so much more. But a big story that no one seems to be talking about is not just what's happening at our border, but the fentanyl crisis that is happening because of it. Now, as anyone who listens to this program knows, I frequent the New York Post. I'm on there every single day, basically. And I ran across a piece by Derek Maltz, who's retired director, DEA of Special Ops. And this is the title. He wrote, "Biden's open border has let cartels kill more Americans from fentanyl than any terror organization." Joining us now to discuss this and to answer some of our questions is Derek Maltz. Derek, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Grace. I appreciate it.
Derek, first, can you just give us a little bit of a rundown as to how bad this problem is right now and how the open border is making it worse?
Well, first of all, the Mexican cartels are the enemy of our children. They are working very closely with the Chinese transnational criminals, and they are pushing poisonous, deadly fentanyl throughout our country like we've never seen ever in the history. We don't have a drug crisis now. We have a mass poisoning crisis. And the Chinese Communist Party started this many years ago, probably back around 2008, 2009. But right now, we have very young kids, as young as 12, 13 years old, that are first-time users. They're experimenting with pills that they're buying on the social media apps. And it's being delivered to their houses like pizza. And their parents are finding them blue in the face, and they're dead. So I work with families from around the country. We had a rally last weekend down in Washington, D.C., to try to get the White House to talk about this issue, since we've never seen this happen in the history of the country.
And Derek, today there's a report in from The Hill. It says DEA says 36 million lethal fentanyl doses seized during enforcement surge. And when you went to this event, the Lost Voices of Fentanyl annual rally in D.C., there was a common question from people there. Can you tell the audience what the most common question was from some of these families?
Yeah, it's very sad because the families just can't understand why the White House would not care about dead kids. Everyone that I know cares about kids and cares about our future generation. But right now, unfortunately, they're not talking about it. They're still misleading the public, talking about this as it was an opioid addiction crisis. Yes, America does have a huge opioid addiction crisis. People have been hooked on pills many years. That's because the corporate cartels dump 100 billion opioids into America in a 9-year period, and we're not held accountable. And that's another story for another day. But the reality is these families are desperately trying to put their grief into action to help save other lives because they don't want it to happen to other families. So it's very admirable that they're doing it, but it's very sad that we continually see no discussion. There's no PSAs. There's no education in our schools. They could teach our kids about critical race theory, but they can't teach the kids about poisonous, deadly fentanyl coming from dirty, filthy labs in Mexico. It's insane. So this is the problem. And we're going to continue to try to push this awareness throughout America. So we appreciate you inviting me on the show to talk about it.
Yeah, it's one of the topics where I'm ashamed to say we don't talk about it nearly enough. And that's why I was thrilled to have someone like you, because you're so passionate about it. For people who are just tuning in, I'm speaking with Derek Maltz. And Derek, a story that I have been seeing a lot lately on the news, and a picture accompanies it. It's this picture of these brightly colored pills that almost, they're designed to look like candy. And they're fake prescription pills that contain potentially deadly fentanyl. And so a lot of people are warning kids about this because they look like candy. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. So the cartels have a very deceptive and strategic marketing plan right now to drive profits, drive addiction, because they want to get these younger kids addicted. That's why we're seeing more and more deaths. Keep in mind, you brought it up, the DEA administrator just announced yesterday they seized 10.2 million fake pills. They also have said in the past repeatedly that 40% of the pills that they're analyzing have a potentially lethal dose of fentanyl. So out of those 10 million, if they would have hit the streets and people would have got their hands on them, that's potentially 400,000 dead Americans. Okay, so we have a record level of deaths. We've never seen it, 300 a day, and it's way underreported, by the way. The CDC stats are horrific. It's a nightmare. The Families Against Fentanyl have written letters to the CDC director about their ridiculous, untimely statistics on the deaths of our kids. But in reality, it's that these cartels understand that kids, you know, like candy. Like the latest seizure was up in Connecticut, 15,000 pills that were packaged in Nerds and Skittle packages. Can you imagine it? We're 1 month away from Halloween, and they're putting poisonous fentanyl pills in candies. I still eat Nerds and Skittles. I love that stuff. The reality is the kids don't know. And by the way, when these kids are buying these drugs, they're not buying them to die from fentanyl. They think they're getting Xanax. They think they're getting Adderall. They think they're getting Percocet. They see mommy and daddy taking Xanax for anxiety. They want to do so. They want to feel better. So they're buying pills, and they have no idea they're getting, you know, poisonous, deadly fentanyl. And that's the issue that I have with the current administration. They're not even talking about it.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, because a lot of times if you can just label a problem, or you can name it, or you can talk about it openly, it can help a lot of people. And it gives people information, and it gives people knowledge, and knowledge is power. Derek, another thing I wanted to ask you about, as far as, because I'm not as informed on fentanyl as you are, but what about when people are not even inhaling this or taking this, but they're just in the presence of it? And like, how strong is this? Because I've heard stories before where someone might be trying to resuscitate someone else who's having an overdose of fentanyl, and they just, by coming in contact with it, can overdose.
Right. So that's a great question, because it's very controversial, and I'm not a doctor, but there has been many videos that have been out there showing police officers that are responding to, you know, a fentanyl seizure, and they come close contact and they drop, and they have to be Narcan, which is a miracle drug, by the way. If it wasn't for Narcan, the numbers would be really off the roof, off the charts, right? But yeah, there has been plenty of stories about coming into contact in close proximity, inhaling it, and people are going to the emergency room, and in some cases, you know, serious overdoses, you know. But again, my thing is, let's keep it simple. It's poison. It's made in these labs. It's a chemical weapon. That's what I've been saying. That's why I want to destroy the labs in Mexico. So who the hell wants to be in close proximity of a chemical weapon? Because that's what it is. And so, you know, this is one of those things where you got people on the other side that are saying, oh, law enforcement is exaggerating, and they're making the public, you know, worry about this stuff. Well, go talk to the parents who are dying. And by the way, going back to something you said earlier, today I'll be on Dr. Phil. He has an episode that's going to air today at 4 o'clock on CBS. The reason I bring it up is because he actually has been a huge advocate now, because he listened to the parents. He listened to what we said, and he feels horrible that his viewers and his listeners on his podcast were misinformed because he didn't know enough about it. So he's now become an advocate for us to help push the message. And that's what we're trying to do. So thank you for that.
Derek, I'm so glad you told people so they can tune in. That's very good to know. One other thing I wanted to ask you, and I hope to have you on again, because I love knowing more about
Anytime.
This. It's such an important issue. Let's talk about the bipartisan movement in Congress and the Families Against Fentanyl's declaration of fentanyl as a weapon of mass destruction. Tell us a little bit about that, and give us an update on the spike that we've seen from 2016 to 2021 as far as fentanyl-related deaths go?
All right, so great question. So number one, probably over 5 years ago, I know I have been calling to designate the cartels as terrorists, because we started seeing their role starting to emerge with the fentanyl many years ago. And so the Chinese started this stuff. The cartels got involved. The Chinese are using the cartels as a proxy to do their dirty work now, because there's been heat on them from President Trump. But anyway, what happens is the Families Against Fentanyl, Jim Rau, he lost his son in Ohio. He's got a nonprofit organization. He's got some really influential people. And they dissected all the statistics, and they saw what's happening. They understand how this is killing our future generation. So they put forth this idea of weapon of mass destruction. I know Tim Ryan out in Ohio, who's a Democrat, and Lauren Boebert of Colorado, who's a Republican. They have bought into this because they're listening to the families, and they understand that this is about, like, Chinese Communist Party's unrestricted warfare to destroy America, destabilize America using these poisonous drugs. And now they have the cartels doing it, so they're not getting the black eye directly. So they have this thing in Congress. I'm not sure what's going to happen. And as you know, Governor Abbott just last week declared the cartels as terrorists in the state of Texas. So there's movement to try to get that done federally so we can use more resources and more authorities and more agencies to go after the problem. But the other thing I just want to bring up, because it's very important that people don't realize, is that the Chinese criminals are also the main money launderers now for the Mexican cartels. And why is that important? Because you read a story not too long ago that there's over $6 billion in property and real estate and land that the Chinese are buying in our country. And most of it is cash transactions. That's because they're picking up cash from cartels as they're killing our kids in our country. So that's another story that's way underreported that has a piece of this. It's not just the chemicals that they're providing to Mexico. They're still making synthetic drugs in their labs in China and poisoning our people. Like, you're going to hear more now about nitazine, isonitazine, etonitazine. It's called pyro on the streets. It's 10 times, 20 times more potent than fentanyl. It's being made in labs in China, and they're putting it on the dark web, and people are buying that stuff now, too. So it's really the perfect storm. Now, you asked me a question about, and I'm sorry, I was going on this part, but you asked me a question about the potency. Can you go back and just get back to that question?
No, Derek, I just wanted to know about this spike in fentanyl-related deaths in, you know, 6 years, roughly.
Yeah. So the reason you're seeing the spike is because the cartels are the ones who control drug distribution in America. So they have the distribution outlet. But now they're taking advantage of a wide-open border. So instead of our border security, instead of our border patrol focusing 100% of their efforts on border security, they've been now doing migrant processing, babysitting, and, you know, rescuing people in the rivers. And they're so brave in what they do. And I love the Border Patrol. I love CBP. But here's the thing. They're still making multi-millions of seizures. Did you see in August they seized, like, over, like, 3, 4, 5 million pills, fake pills. And we seized 1 million pills in L.A. in July, 1 million pills in New Mexico in September, 1 million pills just last week in Phoenix. So if you're seizing that many pills, you can only imagine what's already here in the U.S.
Right.
Because we only seize like 10% usually. That's what they say. The experts say we're seizing about 10%. But most important thing for you to recognize is that the youngest generation, you know, the youngest age group, 13 to 18, is now starting to buy all this stuff on social media. So the drug dealer is in your home, right in your home every day. You don't have to go down the street into a dangerous neighborhood to buy these dangerous pills. You're doing it online, and you got a pizza-type delivery to your house. So that's why the numbers are going through the roof, and will continue because no one's talking about it.
Absolutely. Derek Maltz, we are so grateful that you came on the program. Please tell people where they can find you, where they can follow you on Twitter, and where they can go if they want to learn more about this problem.
Well, Twitter, it's Derek_Maltz_senior, but unfortunately I'm being shadow banned, so I don't know what people can see on Twitter, but I do post everything. I have a YouTube channel under my name, and I post all my news appearances, which is now about 4 years putting this out on Fox News and other Newsmax and other organizations, OANN. But I also have a Facebook National Security Public Safety group, which I publish everything. I put it out every day. I use Getter. I use, you know, Truth Social, any way I can. But the problem is that the message is being suppressed because we're talking about very political issues, China and the Mexican cartels and the border. And that's two topics that this current administration doesn't want to talk about. But we're going to continue to push it every way we can. But let me just say this, and I'll leave it at this. This is not a red or a blue issue. It's a red, white, and blue issue. And kids are supposed to learn from mistakes, not die from mistakes. We all have made mistakes as kids. And these poor kids are not being educated. No one's telling them about this deadly stuff. They're being deceived to death. And that's the name of the show for today on Dr. Phil, Deceived to Death. So So families will tell their story, and he's doing a great job, and just like you're doing a great job and trying to help spread this awareness. So thank you very much.
Derek Maltz, thank you very much. We look forward to watching you on Dr. Phil later today. We will be right back. We'll take all your calls, 844-500-4242. That was Derek Maltz, and this is The Grace Curley Show.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. Answering the hard-hitting questions of our time.
Let's say you're abducted by aliens.
Fine.
They haul you aboard the mothership, take you back to their planet as a curiosity. Now, would you rather be in their zoo or their circus?
It's The Grace Curley Show.
We were just talking to Derek Maltz about the fentanyl crisis that is only made worse by the fact that we have open borders right now. And don't try to fool yourself. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. And actually, one representative, Henry Cuellar, and he's a representative from Texas. He's a Democrat. Howie talks about him a lot because he's one of the only Democrats who's speaking out against this administration and against the way they're handling this border problem. And it's because if you're in Texas, you can't afford to be in a state of denial. You don't have the luxury of pretending things aren't happening and crossing your fingers and hoping that it never shows up in your backyard, this problem. So let's listen to Representative Henry Cuellar. This is Cut 22.
But the most important thing is we need to look at the repercussions. If you don't deport people, then they're going to see the border as a speed bump. We have to deport people. We have to deport people that once are not supposed to be here.
I want to cut in because we don't have a...
She then asks, and that's Harris Faulkner from Fox. Harris then asks this representative Henry Cuellar, if he thinks the border is secure, because you remember that when Kamala Harris was doing an interview recently, she told us the border was secure. She's not the only Democrat. Alejandro Mayorkas told us the border is secure. Joe Biden said there's a legal process in place. Karine Jean-Pierre told us the border is secure. So this is a very legitimate question, and take a listen to his answer. This is Cut 23.
Is the border secure? Is Vice President Kamala Harris right?
Look, obviously the border is not secure, and I've been saying this for so many years.
It is obvious. And Kamala Harris is the border czar, but she doesn't have too much interest in the border. Now, when we come back, what I want to talk about, I want to talk a little bit about the Nord Stream pipelines and the theories that are circling that. And I want to talk about New York, because Eric Adams has this cut that I'm amazed by its obnoxiousness.
I thank God I'm the mayor right now. Yeah.
He's talking about how New York has a brand and Kansas doesn't have a brand. And I have some stories that are going to give you a better idea of what New York's brand is at the current moment. Crime, inflation, trash all over the streets, a subway where you have to, you know, basically bicycle lock yourself onto a pole so you don't get pushed in. All of these things make up New York's brand. And we're going to talk about it when we come back. 844-500-4242. Watching this footage from Florida, and this hurricane is definitely starting to hit. Hurricane Ian will keep you posted. Don't go anywhere. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
We have a brand. New York has a brand. And when people see it, it means something. You know, when we go there, it's not, Kansas doesn't have a brand. <You know? laughs> When you go there, okay, you're from Kansas. No. Well, you know what? But New York has a brand. It has a brand.
Don't you just love the smug condescension and the giggles as he laughs at people in Kansas? Coastal elites, you gotta love them. That was New York City's Mayor Eric Adams. There's something about Gracie Mansion. It just makes people obnoxious. Bill de Blasio sitting back. He must be feeling like Jimmy Carter right now. You guys thought I was bad for eating my Shake Shack fries on the camera. No, he was bad for a lot of reasons. But still, Eric Adams giving him a run for his money. 781 says, New York, come for the trash-covered streets, stay for the subway beatings. That's on brand. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on in New York.
Thank God I'm the mayor right now.
Jared, I think this whole segment will be about the Empire State. So can we get a little bit of a musical introduction?
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today.
I want to be a part of it. New York. New York's brand is what I want to be a part of. So let's first start with, and I have a few different stories. Some of them are lighter than others. This one's pretty serious. Let's talk. This is from the New York Post. Let's talk about the New York City poster boy for bail reform's failure. His name is Pedro Hernandez. I'm just going to read you a couple of interesting tidbits about Pedro. Pre-reform, he spent a year in jail after refusing to take a plea deal in 2015 for a botched bodega robbery, or as Joe Biden might call it, a bogada robbery. Tuesday at 22, he was arraigned for attempted murder outside St. Patrick's Cathedral. Cops nabbed him in that case Monday afternoon after he backed out on plans to surrender willingly. Will the no bail crowd rally to his side again with new excuses for his dangerous antisocial behaviors? Now, I want to go through because in 7 short years, Hernandez has racked up at least 13 arrests, including various gun charges, reckless endangerment, reckless driving, armed robbery charges, and now attempted murder. Make no mistake, the echoes of violence are there. At 16, Hernandez spent a year in Rikers lockup on weapons possession and other charges related to the 2015 shooting of another teen boy, until the Robert F. Kennedy Human Rights Nonprofit bailed him out. Charges in that case were later dropped after his alleged victim recanted his identification and another witness stopped cooperating with prosecutors. And then in parentheses, it says, it's funny how witnesses back off when the accused is roaming the streets. Now, the New York Post is very helpful because they come up with a little highlight sheet. December 2018, Hernandez missed an RFK Foundation gala when he was arrested for allegedly driving a stolen BMW in the Bronx without a license. Ah. Oh. I'm sure all the gala committee members were bummed that he had to miss the occasion. April 2019, he was allegedly among a group that slashed a man in the Bronx while trying to rob him of his Gucci watch and gold chain. The case is still pending. May 2019, so we're just going month to month at this point. We go from April to May. He was charged with reckless endangerment on another reckless driving arrest and released with no bail. The same month, Bronx prosecutors dropped a 2015 robbery charge because Hernandez made good on a deal to complete a semester in college. That's the trade-off? Okay, I don't follow. June 2019, he was busted for reversing his car against traffic and blowing through several stop signs in a bid to evade Bronx cops. Now he's at last in jail after his alleged crimes escalated to attempted murder. Despite his long criminal history, 3 open gun cases and a month on the lam from the cops, his lawyer still tried to get him released. And prosecutors were able to show that he was a flight risk. You know how, Jared? Because he had booked several flights out of the country. If it had just been one flight that he booked, maybe he would have gotten away with it, but he booked several.
A man with a plan.
Man with several plans. This is a 3-pronged plan. Joe Biden would be proud. The flight risk in his record convinced the judge to remand him without bail. Well, took a lot of convincing, but finally someone was convinced that this man is a flight risk. Otherwise, New York's lax laws would have required bail to be affordable, making it likely he'd soon win release with the least restrictive conditions and be back in the Bronx neighborhood lickety-split. I just have to point out that he is indeed the poster boy for bail reform in New York City. And we're all wondering why things are the way they are. And also, if you're wondering why Governor Kathy Hochul is pretending to suddenly be disappointed in Alvin Bragg, it's because of her poll numbers. It's not because she actually cares that someone like this person would be roaming the streets after several arrests and gun charges and reckless driving and attempted murder. That's not what keeps her up at night. It's the idea of maybe losing the gubernatorial race in New York. By the way, New York City gives Hochul the lead over Zeldin, but the governor race is neck and neck in the suburbs. I've been following this because I just think it would make me really happy to see Zeldin win. And so I know that it's a long shot, but right now, and keep in mind the poll that I'm looking at, it's got like a 3.9% margin of error. And in a lot of areas, it's really, really split. It's really either close or it's split 47-47. Suburbanites are evenly split on these candidates. I think he's got a shot. I would love to see Zeldin pull this off. Now, as we're talking about New York, here's a story that's a little bit lighter for you. This is about McDonald's. Upper West Side apartment dwellers tormented by endless McDonald's smell. So first I saw this, Jared.
The Hamburglar is very clever and very sneaky.
And I didn't really click on it, and I just kind of scrolled by it. But then I saw it in a few other places. I'm reading it from the New York Post. But it says, residents of a West 95th Street building say they're being forced to live with the smell of McDonald's fries. I know what you're thinking. Just say you're welcome, or just say thank you and move on. Sounds delightful. But according to these people, it really smells more like rancid hamburgers, and it's just getting pumped toward their building all day. But here's the worst part. Okay, this is the part where I did feel sympathy for these people. It wasn't originally, like, the rooftop exhaust fan wasn't originally pointed towards them until a swanky new high-rise was put up and they decided that we can't have the greasy French fry smell going towards the fancy people in the high-rise. You know, that Then they might think that New York's brand is stinky McDonald's.
Gone the days when you have to pull up to a McDonald's and sit in the parking lot with your child to do their homework when there's virtual learning going on.
I like that. Yeah, it's just a smelly situation for the people in the building. And Jared, I do think this is unfair, and I was trying to think of a solution because it's got to go somewhere. You know what I mean? And it is New York City. The smell has got to go somewhere. The fans got to point somewhere. What I think they should do is, in the spirit of things being fair, in the spirit of paying your fair share, I think it should be like a rotating schedule. On Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, it gets pointed towards the fancy high rise. Tuesdays, Thursdays, Saturdays, Sundays, it gets pointed towards the other building. But if you live in the building and you haven't had the French fry stank coming towards you every day, and then all of a sudden, 7 days a week, you're getting a fish fillet scent coming through your window, that's got to be brutal. Plus, here's a little factoid from this story that makes it, I really feel for this person. One of the people quoted in this is a vegetarian. And the vegetarian's window overlooks the vent. What do you do in this? I mean, like, you really can't do anything about it. You almost have to just embrace it. But for the people in the high rise, they're probably just like, don't even think about turning that fan towards us.
There's got to be a way they can just push it underground into the subway or something like that. Or into the old pneumatic transit or into the sewer. There's got to be a place where the way they can do that.
It doesn't seem fair, is all I'm saying. It doesn't seem fair to the people who haven't been dealing with this.
There was the last place I worked in L.A. It was downtown right across from the Staples Center, which is Crypto Arena now. There were a bunch of restaurants in there, and there was one tunnel you kind of had to walk through to get to our building, and it did have the exhaust fan from one of the restaurants, and that was the grossest thing ever.
So it doesn't smell like when you walk into the restaurant.
No, it doesn't smell like French fries. It smells like burnt grease, and I can't even describe it. And it's like a warm breeze. I mean, it is just the apotheosis of awful.
You know what they could do at the very least is say, listen, it's gonna smell. It's going to smell like this forever. And your home's going to stink. And I'm sure it's like nicotine where it's going to get into all your clothes. Your walls are going to turn yellow. And yeah, that's going to suck for you. But here's the trade-off. Okay, we're going to sweeten the pot. Free French fries for as long as you live in that building. It's the least they could do. Free fountain soda. Give me something.
If you live by this McDonald's, Eden Pure Thunderstorm is definitely the way to go.
It is so.
EdenPureDeals.com.
So true.
/ Grace.
And of course, I don't have an Eden Pure read right now, but it is true. You should definitely get yourself a Thunderstorm. Have you looked at your retirement account lately? Wall Street is in a downturn and it's taking your retirement money with it. Whether it's inflation or the looming recession, the higher interest rates, you know what all these things have in common? Joe Biden. And the fact is that we are in a financial storm and the global economy is weakening and all of this is happening really quickly. So you want to be prepared. You need a hedge to protect your retirement so you don't lose any more money. That's why our friends at Monetary Gold would like to send you two free guides. The first guide is 5 money mistakes that could crush your retirement in the next 6 months. And the second guide is the 2022 Monetary Gold Protection Guide. These guides, and I'm going to tell you this one more time, they're totally free, will show you how to protect your assets and get through this financial crisis. And that's all that we're trying to do is just make our way through it and protect our money as best we can. Did you know that during the high inflation of the 70s, gold increased in value 2,300%? And today you can buy physical gold or silver and roll over your IRA or 401k retirement account. Gold and silver can help you diversify your risk, plus it protects your retirement in these uncertain times. So call Monetary Gold now to get your two free guides. I'm going to give you the number. It's 800-267-6500. Again, that's 800-267-6500. Or you can go to monetarygold.com/grace. One more time, the number is 800-267-6500 or go to monetarygold.com/grace. 844-500-4242. We're talking about New York's brand. You know whose brand I like? I like Texas's brand. I like New Hampshire's brand. I like Florida's brand. New York's brand, not so much for me. I'm not interested. We'll be right back with your calls. Don't go anywhere. This is the Grace Curley Show.
What are we doing?
Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley. Grace Curley. She's working for you.
I'm like Bette Midler and for the boys. I've got to keep the troops entertained.
Tell by my attitude that I most definitely need from
New York. Hey. Uh-huh. I'm beat down with dreams are made of. There's nothing you can't do.
There's nothing you can't do. Maybe you don't want to ride the subway, but doesn't mean you can't do it. It's a little dicey. This all brings us to today's poll question. Eric Adams says New York has a brand and Kansas does not have a brand. Today's poll question is brought to you by the Eden Pure Gen 40 heater. Natural gas bills will be $46 a month higher compared to last year. The Gen 40 has dual hybrid technology and will reduce your heating bill every month and save you money. Plus, it's just great to have. It keeps you super toasty warm. And you can save $50 on the Gen 40 with code GRACE50 at EdenPureDeals.com. That's code GRACE50 at EdenPureDeals.com. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Whose brand do you like better, New York or Kansas?
Kansas.
93% of the audience says Kansas, 7% for New York.
Yeah, it's Eric Adams. Saying,
he's Dorothy got did not click her heels 3 times to go to New York.
You know,
Clark Kent did not land in New York. I'm just saying.
Yeah. And, you know, Eric Adams, it's pretty amazing how, I don't know, sometimes I feel like when you get elected into a position like that, over time, you get a really big head because, you know, you have your private security, you're going to all these events, everybody wants to take a photo with you. But it's pretty impressive how quickly he became such a narcissist. You know, you almost, you have to tip your cap to him because it's only been a little while and he's already talking about himself. I'm waiting for him to talk about himself in the third person. That's got to be coming soon.
To be fair, the baseline of narcissism is that he's already a New Yorker. So you start out almost at 8 and it goes to 11.
Ooh.
So like that, you start out at 8 if you're from New York.
I will say.
So it's an easy leap.
That if you left the politics out of it in general, I like the attitude of a New Yorker. I do. I tend, and before COVID happened, I remember having Libby Emmons on, and she's from New York, or she's from Massachusetts, but she's lived in New York City for a long time. She talked about, it might have been Libby, it might have been Carol Markowitz, but one of them talked about how they always thought New Yorkers were so tough and, you know, saw through BS. Like, that's the real thing, is they see through BS. And for the most part, I still believe that. But COVID definitely changed my view on that front, because there was a lot of New Yorkers who went full-blown panic and full-blown double masking, plexiglass, you know, vaccine passports and all that stuff. So that definitely skewed my opinion as well. Something I wanted to talk about here quickly while we have a little bit of time. There's a lot of conversations happening about 2024 and what Joe Biden will do. I don't think there's really any question that he is not fit to run. He wasn't fit the first time around, or the second, or the third, or the fourth, and he's definitely not going to be fit this upcoming election. That doesn't mean he won't run, though. You know, he is their puppet, and they don't want to lose that. He will do whatever they want. You're seeing that with student loan cancellation. You're seeing that with this climate bill. He will do what he's told, and there's a lot of value in that. But there are Democrats, we were just talking about narcissism, there are Democrats with huge egos who are still miffed that they lost out. And one of those people is Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont, who has made a career off of running for president over and over again. And guess what? He's not ruling it out. Can I have this cut, Jared? This is Bernie Sanders. I want to play this and then we'll react.
Do you plan to run again? That's something, you know, I haven't made that decision. Right now, my focus, and I'll be going around the country, dealing with trying to elect often young progressives, often young people of color,
yeah,
who are prepared to stand up for working right. families and take on big money interests.
That was from CBS. I think, a yes. If the opportunity presents itself, he will for sure run again.
He needs another lake house buy-off in the primaries, of course.
And you know, when you watch Bernie Sanders, and again, this is damning with very faint praise, but watching him in this clip versus watching Joe Biden thank a woman who died in a car accident who he doesn't know is not there because she's deceased, and that's how out of it he is, Bernie Sanders does look super sharp compared to Joe Biden. He looks, and he's older than Joe. He's 81. And compared to Joe, he looks with it. Socratic, even. He looks like the kind of guy who, if the Easter Bunny tried to lead him around, he might say, hands off my mittens.
Oh, that clean Vermont living. He didn't grow up sucking in the air from coal mines off of his windshield when there were oil slicks because of Ambrose keeping the faith.
Ambrose Finnegan. You're right. Do you think Bernie will run?
I think he'll run in the primary, yeah, and then they'll buy him off like they do every time.
If I'm AOC or I'm one of these younger Democrats, like even Eric Swalwell, and I hear Bernie Sanders is running, I don't think I'd be even able to bite my tongue. I would say, are you kidding me? When are you people going to give it up? You're over 80 years old. Move on, man. You're living in the past.
Blah, 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 blah.
Hey, but if the money's still good, keep it going. Keep the grift going, Bern. Feel the burn. We'll be right back with more. We're going to talk about the Nord Stream pipelines when we come back, and we'll take your calls. This is The Grace Curley Show.